Hello, I'm Lori Watanabe, the editor of Mobility Management Magazine. Welcome back to our Mobility Management Podcast. And for this episode, I'm joined by Tom Hetzel from Ride Designs to talk about reconsidering how and when we think about custom seating. Tom Hetzel is the co-founder and CEO of Ride Designs. He's been involved in virtually all levels of the seating and mobility industry for more than 30 years. Tom supports clinical practice at Aspen Seating and leads education and product design at Ride Designs. And Tom holds multiple patents in the wheelchair seating and mobility industry. Our episode is sponsored by Ride Designs. Ride Designs believes in wheelchair seating systems that work in tandem. The company is committed to creating and providing seating systems that enhance the user's mobility, function, and posture, all while protecting their skin better than anything they've used in the past. Ride Designs wheelchair cushions are backed by university-level research and years of clinical application. Cushion designs are based on the orthotic and prosthetic principles of offloading at-risk bony prominences while safely supporting parts of the body that can tolerate contact. This strategy aids in improved postural control, mobility, and skin care. Ride Designs hosts the Aspen Seating Clinic at its Denver headquarters, where world-class athletes, Paralympians, and the most discerning of wheelchair users come for seating solutions. Tom, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being with me.
It's a great pleasure, Lori. I appreciate the invitation and an opportunity to kind of share some of our ideas to folks that aren't quite in the loop or in the loop of Ride Design. So awesome. Thank you.
Well, fantastic. I'm going to give everybody a little background on our conversation, because actually the idea for this podcast came from Tom during an interview we were doing about 3D printing. So if you haven't heard the news, Ride Designs has not only launched its 3D printing process, but as of September 1st, 2023, Ride will be printing 100% of its Ride custom backs, a manufacturing process that will cut down on the time typically required to go from a scan in the field to modifications and ultimately to the finished product. And Tom was explaining how 3D printing has so positively impacted Ride Design's manufacturing abilities. We'll go more in depth on that in a little bit. But Tom also mentioned that traditionally, custom seating has been considered a last resort in complex rehab technology. Tom said that his Ride Designs partner and co-founder, Joe Baganik, has referred to traditional custom seating as a kind of a catcher's mitt, the last resort, last ditch effort to get our most complex clients into effective seating. But Ride Designs has historically focused on custom seating, and because of that perspective, Tom said Ride Designs has a different mantra, which is custom sooner for more meaningful and lasting outcomes. So that's what we're talking about today, how to determine when custom seating is the best avenue for a client, and how and why today's custom seating options are different from what we've seen available in the past. And Tom, I want to start off with a disclaimer. In the interview, you told me, ethically and by necessity, you have to rule out lesser products before you consider custom seating. And in fact, Ride Designs does have standard products, such as your forward cushion and Java cushion and back. And you said, look, if you're doing an evaluation and you seat the client using standard products, and the client and the therapist both say, hey, this is it, this is definitely it, then you said, that's great, then that's the way to go. But if the reaction of the client and the clinician is less than that, then you should be asking yourself, is this a good enough outcome? And how are we measuring the outcome? So let me start by asking you if you can explain your stance on standard seating when it works well, and then what the next steps in seating clinic should be if standard seating does not work well.
Yeah, I'd be happy to, Lori. Really important concepts to be considering in our current working environment. And yes, I think the most important thing I want to make sure I'm clear to your listeners is that, yes, you have to rule out lesser products. If those off-the-shelf, lower-cost alternatives work well, perfect. But anything short of, you know, those aha moments, anything that doesn't produce a good enough outcome, which really needs to be defined. I'll at some point during this interview speak to more specific things that can be considered or looked for in the MAT assessment. You know, so as you're going through the process, you're going to recognize that, you know, typically the seating system that the individual comes in with is probably not working well. So you've already ruled out one system, and then doing the homework of establishing if there might be a better off-the-shelf alternative. What I want to really think about is kind of changing the paradigm of how we consider custom. I think custom, as a rule, has been relegated to a last-ditch effort, not so much because it's the right approach being the last-ditch effort, it's because of product limitations in the past. When we think about, you know, traditional custom molded seating, you think of the heavy, bulky, non-adjustable seating systems that can't manage heat and moisture. These old style systems of the past, because of the limitations, really got relegated to that last ditch effort because of those limitations. So Ride Designs has really focused first and foremost on creating a superior product that addresses, you know, those limitations, both perceived and real, of traditional custom. And by doing so, it expands the application. So we're able to better address the needs, not only of what I would call that, you know, when you think about the bell curve of application of Ride or of any custom seating inclusive of Ride, that top of the bell curve is what you oftentimes think of as that person with multiple disabilities with a very unique body shape that is simply in any measure whatsoever nowhere near a match for anything that would come off the shelf. So when we solve those shortcomings of those products that all fit well in the top of that bell curve, we can expand out onto the reaches of both ends of that bell curve relative to the growing and developing child, and then also to the extremely high risk, and I mean by high risk, skin risk, even active rider on the upper end of that scale as well too. The idea is identifying consistent and persistent postural challenges that cannot be satisfactorily addressed with simple off-the-shelf products. And the two words that were really important there are persistent and consistent. That means they come in with these issues to your clinic, you evaluate that client and recognize them through the MAT assessment that what's causing those, and you see them persist and be consistent in your trials with lesser products. When we recognize those issues and start thinking custom, and we do it earlier, what our experience tells us through our own clinic program is that when we're able to intervene earlier with custom and when it's appropriate, we can do what I would refer to as more restorative seating. That means improving postural alignment, optimizing postural orientation for a more functional posture, a posture and a functional base that operates from more neutral alignment, provides a great degree more possibility for movement from that alignment, as opposed to late intervention, which is the typical application of custom. And with late intervention, we're oftentimes intervening after structural change prevents corrective intervention. This is truly what I would call adaptive seating versus restorative seating. Adaptive seating that by necessity requires a more accommodative and stabilizing approach. We kind of call it the too late intervention. Those goals of accommodate and stabilize are very noble goals, and they need to be met in late intervention to try to halt or slow or retard the progression of a situation. But the process and work involved in doing that is oftentimes much greater and without the really eye-catching aha moments that we can oftentimes achieve if we'd have intervened a little bit earlier.
Okay, I love what you said, that we often think of custom seating in terms of a bell curve when we think about the people who could benefit from it or the people who for whom custom seating would be most appropriate. And I love that you're saying it's not just those people that are impossible to seat any other way. And that's kind of been the definition of custom seating traditionally in the industry, is it's the people who are impossible to seat any other way. In the past, that's meant foam in place is basically the only thing we can go for. And you're talking about restorative seating. You're talking about actually intervening before we get to those other places where we're just having to adapt because we can't do anything else. So that rolls right into my next question, which is, how can the seating team know when it's time to seriously consider custom seating as the optimal choice, as the better solution? And you said something earlier about when you get calls from a clinician or a seating team and they say, look, we've been struggling with a standard Java product to make it fit for 2 days. That Ride Design's response to them is, you should have captured a shape for us so we could do a custom cushion 47 hours ago. So it really fits in with this think of custom sooner. Am I getting that correct?
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly right. I spoke a little bit about the limitations of traditional custom, but it's also important that we understand how standard products are developed. Standard products, including our Java and Forward and Java Cushion and virtually every other standard off-the-shelf type product, are products that are based on a range of anthropomorphic norms. You know, that means typical measurements of even from more like able-bodied individuals. There's just not a database out there that I'm aware of that really outlines how those anthropomorphic norms are altered when we consider people with a range of disabilities. When you think about anthropomorphic norms, it also looks at, you know, these products are designed to meet the needs around an individual that can sit or correct fairly easily to a more neutral postural alignment. What we really like at Ride Designs is having this continuum. So as you'd mentioned, you know, the whole 2 days struggling with a Java cushion, well, there's a lot of time and resources wasted there that 47 hours ago, a shape could have been captured and we could have been well on our way to solving that individual's challenges. But if a manufacturer does not have that continuum and all they have are standard products and their interest, and understandably, is to make the sale, it's oftentimes when you start to get those responses from other manufacturers. And trust me, I've been there. It was Rick Jay of Jay Medical that moved me to Denver, Colorado over 30 years ago. And I was in a company that had great seating products, continue to have great seating product, but we didn't have anything to use in custom. So we were constantly faced with these challenges of individuals whose needs really fell outside of what the product was designed for. We felt an obligation to stretch the limits of those products, saying things like, well, you can put a wedge here, or you can carve here, or you can modify here. And it's basically trying to take a standard product and make it a custom product, thinking that, well, we can do this for a lower cost. You know, if a minor modification, like a simple leg trough modification in the base of a off-the-shelf cushion, allows for an accommodation of what we would call an open hip angle of a few degrees, and that allows the pelvis to then settle into more neutral alignment with a good trunk response, then by all means. But what we try to do is recognize, okay, listen, you get the person on a standard product of any manufacturer and the needs aren't being met, let's start thinking custom. And you need to think about what you discover through the MAT assessment and the evaluation. Most savvy wheelchair seating specialists are going to pretty much know when the presentation goes beyond that which they can have a degree of confidence in off-the-shelf products going to work. When they first meet the client, the first thing we typically do at our clinic is you can typically identify the postural tendency. At Ride Designs, if you ever come to our certification course, you'll find that, yeah, we do pay attention to alignment without a doubt. It's oftentimes one of the more motivating factors that brings a client to the clinic is that, you know, I'm falling apart. My alignment is just not what it was a year, two, three, seven, 10 years ago. And I'm really motivated to improve my alignment. And we'll work towards supporting that individual on their best possible alignment, recognizing it's going to be unique to that individual. But what won't be unique to that individual and is common to all individuals is the fact, to some degree, is what influenced that alignment over time. Why is it that, you know, you may have done a fitting in your clinic and it's time for that client now that you've done the initial skin check, that looks positive. It's time to get that client an hour sitting time. And you say, go down to the cafeteria and get yourself a bite to eat. And they go down there and they're looking great, right? You and your clinic, you as in a clinician, the clinician and their team and the ATP provider, you know, head down. Hey, let's go down to the cafeteria ourselves and grab a quick sandwich. And you go down there, you're in line, you go through line, you get that wonderful food that's just really available in every hospital. You head out to the cash register, you walk beyond the cash register, and over in the corner there is Mr. Smith, who you just fitted. And he's half falling out of his chair. His alignment has completely collapsed. He's like, man, he just looked great just moments ago. But now, just moments later, seeing a deterioration. Yes, that system had the basic properties and corrective support essentially where it seemed to need to be, but it couldn't withstand those extrinsic and intrinsic forces that were influencing a change in that posture over time. So we at Ride Designs and the Aspen Seating Clinic have a much stronger focus on what influences alignment over time than we do on the alignment just itself. When you look at the MAT assessment process, the interview, identification of postural tendency, then you move into supine, and you start to recognize things right away. When you're in the supine assessment, the goal of the supine part is to simply establish if there are limitations in range of motion. Are there clear roadblocks to achieving good alignment? You're not going to be able to establish a specific seating parameter from that supine assessment. But what you can do is rule out some things. If you're in the supine assessment and you start to establish, even if a person appears to sit in reasonably good alignment, if in supine you start to recognize glaring asymmetries, maybe it's trunk flexibility left and right, it goes through neutral, but it goes really far to the right, barely makes it to the left? Do you see hip angles that one hip, yeah, goes to 95 with a very, very firm end feel and the other one has full 120 degrees? Hamstring changes? When you start to see in the supine assessment that things aren't looking symmetrical, something's happening. And if you're seeing those asymmetries and they're not presenting themselves in sitting, that means those asymmetries are being caused by something happening outside of the chair. And that means that client needs an aggressive 24-hour postural care program to address those growing asymmetries before they start to manifest and influence their seating alignment. So we do the supine assessment, and then we move up into sitting, right? The first thing that needs to happen when we go up into sitting is to take into account and accommodate any kind of postural deviation that would impact primarily the pelvic alignment. So if you got an open hip angle, you need to push, bring the person further forward on the mat table so that hip can extend. Do you have tight hamstrings? You need to allow those knees to flex and those feet to tuck up underneath the individual. Anything you see, you take care of. And then the idea in the sitting is to establish where within all of that available range of motion that you established in supine, where within all that range of motion can that person be best supported comfortably and functionally? And what's going to happen in that sitting assessment is a hands-on assessment. The evaluator and the provider need to be sensitive to what's going on with the hands of the evaluator. If the hands of the evaluator during the sitting assessment naturally migrate onto the person's body in an asymmetrical fashion, right away, you're in the process of eliminating symmetrical support. I see this disconnect often in clinics. I'll see somebody, a thoughtful team, go through the MAT assessment. I'll watch it. I'll see a therapist's hands go dramatically towards asymmetrical placement on the body, and then they don't even think custom. They'll go and get the best result they can, oftentimes because of a misperception. And this misperception is that this requirement for asymmetry for custom misperception is that the person has to have a postural deviation that can't be corrected out of asymmetry. So what we need to document is that persistent and consistent collapse, either active or passive collapse or move into asymmetry for whatever reason. It has to be persistent and consistent. And then we need to document through our sitting evaluation and then our simulation how a system can or cannot meet that need. If your hands are going into asymmetry to correct a person's alignment towards neutral, you are probably not going to find that a symmetrical system off the shelf is going to correct that alignment. And you're probably going to find that the outcome is not ideal. And you don't want to just get close. We're talking about people who are going to be living a long, long time. And as soon as a person starts to drift off of symmetrical alignment, all the gravity lever arm starts to increase, the speed and rate in which a posture can deteriorate accelerates. We've got to catch these sooner because people are living a long time with complex injuries and diseases that weren't able to do that decades ago. So in sitting, we identify where the postural supports are going to be needed. And if they go into asymmetry, that automatically should trigger thoughts of custom. Your listeners might be thinking at this point, well, why not just take a symmetrical back support and put lateral trunk supports on those? Because they can be configured in asymmetry. And that's a really, really reasonable response, especially if you focus primarily on alignment. And when you think about that scenario, going down to the cafeteria and seeing your beloved client across the room falling apart, that may be a person that was applied, you know, nice tall Java back with some asymmetrical lateral trunk supports. The shortcoming of that is, yeah, you may get those supports where they need to be relative to the body, but you may not have those supports relative to gravity where they need to be. Those locations of those postural supports and asymmetry, the location anatomically is important for the placement as you consider alignment. But the orientation of those supports in space needs to be optimized as well. By doing so, we can orient the body in a fashion where we change the relationship to gravity. So if I have a persistent and consistent tendency to collapse, let's say, to the right, our goal should be to improve the alignment and reverse that tendency. So let's say we apply some lateral trunk supports, and we say, oh, that is a dramatic improvement in alignment. But you look at the client and you say, you know, when they take a deep breath and they relax, or I observe them as they fatigue, that right shoulder is continuing to drop. So yeah, you improve the alignment, but when they rest and relax, they're still collapsing to the right. That means you only got half the picture. You improve the alignment, but you did not establish a more constructive relationship with gravity, so that when the client leaves and they relax, the tendency would be for the left shoulder to drop, and we get elongation of that long primary curve. And the only way that can be really successful is if we catch these things early. If you're working really, really late, in late intervention, and the curve is dramatic, the degree of a postural system, it's a shame you can't see my hands right now because I'm really explaining this well with my hands. The degree in which you have to go to a lateral orientation, that degree of lateral orientation to reverse that tendency is so great that you may have somebody that's 14 inches wide in the pelvis, but needs a 28-inch wide system because of that. So the key to this is identifying these persistent and consistent challenges. And for custom, yes, you'll need to identify that asymmetrical tendency. So regardless of its flexibility, what the presentation is corrected as far as alignment, you have the presence of an asymmetrical tendency that manifests itself. And you have to be able to reduce the alignment towards optimal alignment and, equally important, alter the orientation. And that's what you're able to do in simulation, this last part of it. Yes, take those off-the-shelf products and simulate a seating system on a base that's available. And think about what you're seeing. Oh, look, Mr. Smith has improved alignment. What then is happening as Mr. Smith sits for a while? Does Mr. Smith have the cognitive wherewithal to understand and follow the command, Mr. Smith, take a real deep breath and just totally relax and see what happens to the alignment. If Mr. Smith doesn't have capability, then you have to find an opportunity to afford yourself that chance to observe what happens as Mr. Smith fatigues. So what you're going to likely find is if in the sitting evaluation, your hands went into asymmetry, but you sit them in symmetrical seating with an asymmetrical tendency and they fatigue, they're going to collapse in the same direction that they came in with. What you can do in simulation with custom then is not only exquisitely apply those corrective forces exactly where they need to be relative to the body, you can influence the person's orientation and shape such that you can address the strength of those tendencies. And there's only one favorable tendency in sitting for a good resting posture. We call it the posterior tendency, not a posterior alignment. I'm not advocating that it's okay to be sitting there in a slouched posterior slumped posture with a posterior pelvic tilt and lumbar thoracic kyphosis. What I'm talking about is the optimal alignment. But when that person rests, they have a posterior tendency. That means that when the person rests, they're able to rest in their best alignment, rest into their supports, and stay in their chair. So that's what I mean by posterior alignment. If you have an anterior tendency at rest, think about it, a young person with Duchenne muscular dystrophy, how they relax and they relax forward. We need to try to reverse those tendencies in early intervention. And then when we think about lateral tendencies, those tendencies when the person relaxes, they collapse or move into an asymmetrical alignment to gain the stability that's lacking in the seating system. So in summary, we need to pay attention to our MAT assessment. This MAT assessment requirement is not something you're doing just for eyewash. It is your key to your whole pattern of intervention. If you ever are working with one of our with a client and using RIDE and you call us for help, we're constantly going to be asking you, what did you find in your MAT assessment? What did you find in your sitting alignment? What was needed and where do the supports not only need to be anatomically, but where do they need to be in space to address the tendency? And paying attention to that in simulation. The idea is changing the paradigm that a person needs to have a twisted, crazy, unique body shape along with these strong tendencies to get custom. We need to catch that sooner. That means persistent and consistent postural and functional challenges that aren't being met with off-the-shelf products and not settling for good enough with those off-the-shelf products. We know things get worse. That idea of looking at a person that you've just made some subtle improvements on and say, well, this is a little bit better, Mr. Smith. Let's see how you look in a year from now. We know through our clinical practice, good evidence-based clinical practice, that people with a destructive postural tendency, no matter how subtle, if it's not managed at the time of intervention, you can rest assured that when you see that client a year from now, they're going to be in worse condition. And you may have gone from that opportunity to do restorative interventions with custom to now you are in that accommodate and stabilize camp. I hope that was clear enough without demonstration and my hands floating in space here. But yeah.
Yeah, I wish people could see where your hands were positioned, because when you were talking about that, the asymmetrical, the hands, clinicians' hands moving in an asymmetrical way, and they might not even be fully aware that that's happening, right? But you can see it as an objective observer. You can see it. I'm going to bring technology into the conversation now, because I think historically some of the reluctance to go to a custom solution has been because of the elongated timeline. Custom products historically have taken much longer than grabbing standard products off the shelf. So now we're going to talk about 3D printing, add that to the equation, and talk about how 3D printing has the potential to rewrite those timelines. So RIDE Designs obviously has been working on this for years. Tom, how has 3D printing changed your manufacturing timeline for custom seating? And in that regard, also gotten products more quickly to your clinicians and your clients?
This whole idea of additive manufacturing is just amazing. And yes, one of the results of this new process is the potential for a significant improvement in turn time from shape capture to scanning, communication, receipt of those shapes, and then movement into the CAD side of the program where we create these modified shapes per our patented processes and then create car files for our cushions and print files for our backs. That process now, it has been through very, very complex process with additive manufacturing, has been essentially simplified and made more repeatable and more accurate. In the short term, folks can expect more accurate and more consistent products from Ride Designs. Jody Whitmire, I had the privilege of working for back about 1998. I did some product management and some work with them just for a short period of time. That was before Aspen Seating and Ride Designs. And Jody Whitmire always said, and once a product is 90% done, it's safe, you've done the testing, it's ready to go, it's time to launch it. Launch it and let the community, let the market, let the end users finesse that last 10%. And that's where we are right now with the additive manufacturing. You can do so much with 3D printing that we actually, with respect to our research and development team and our process, it was a 5-year process. We put the blinders up. We said, we need to print our Ride Custom back. Our Ride Custom back has been our most popular product forever. And there was no way we were going to do anything to compromise that. All we could do at that point was just make a better process for manufacturing for it. Speed, accuracy, and environmentally. The amount of waste prior to 3D printing, a positive model had to be carved of that person's shape. And then materials were then serially vacuum formed around that model. And only a small part of all those materials actually got delivered to the client. Everything else that was used to get there was sent to a landfill. And we're talking tons of material to landfill. So environmentally, it's been really, really huge. The idea of feature creep means when you're in a design process, a process kind of takes a life of its own. And the design team keeps on saying, hey, we could do this or we could do that. And it draws out that whole process. Well, with additive manufacturing, the beauty of it is you can create a plan and execute it very quickly and begin testing very quickly, as opposed to creating a plan, then going and find somebody who can do rapid prototyping or even to scanning things. Now, with all the technologies of scanning, 3D printing, we can really quickly move from concept to prototype to testing. So that's how we try to utilize it. So what we have done at Ride Designs is we put up the blinders. We've got the Ride Custom back now being printed 100%. Actually, by the time this podcast goes live, we'll be toasting our success at being at 100% production of our Ride Custom back through 3D printing. We not only built our additive manufacturing facility to meet the needs now, we built capacity to support our fairly aggressive projections for business growth over the next 2 to 3 years, and we added enough capacity to dedicate 3D printing capacity specifically for research and development. So the whole idea is that we are in the process of shifting the Ride Custom back from a research and development and commercial project to strictly a commercial project where we exercise the success of the design. And that's going to then free up our research and development team to make further incremental improvements, but to also consider new product development and move towards that process of recognizing a need and how can we better support that need and then leverage our new capacities to do so. And one of the things I like to focus on too is the environmental piece. Additive manufacturing produces very little waste, and 100% of that waste is recyclable. And so we do recycle all that. We're going from literally tons of nasty materials going to a landfill to zero. I mean, we were filling upwards of 2 large dumpsters a day with these positive body shapes. So I'm really thrilled about the environmental impact as well too. That in and of itself, of course, with cost restraints included, is worthy of the process that we've been through.
Okay, and I think it's also, I guess, important to point out that this is not just as simple as getting a 3D printer and reading the instruction manual. You needed to make sure that if one was down, right, if a printer was down, you had the capacity to continue production so that your production wouldn't be crippled. And you also said you wanted to make sure you had the capacity for your research and development team to continue to work so they have their own dedicated 3D printing equipment and technology so that they can continue to work, you can continue to be forward looking while at the same time you're producing today's backs, for instance. So with that in mind, what do you think the future of custom seating will look like from a production timeline as technology improves? Do you expect the timeline for custom seating as a whole to get better?
I think two things are going to converge. We're already seeing through our work over the last 15 years, the realization of what I'm speaking to as far as custom sooner for more meaningful and lasting outcomes, that's being proven out in the field every day. And so you can tell by the complexity of the shapes that we're getting is that, yeah, we still get the top of the bell curve, very challenging looking shapes, but we're seeing people with more subtle deviations from balanced, such that I know that the demand not only by our referral sources and customers, but by the end users themselves, as we're addressing the baby boomers, as they age, they're not going to be so quick to say, yeah, this is good enough or I accept this. And as they learn more about what's available, they're going to be demanding things that fit. You know, people are in wheelchairs because they can't sit correctly and they can't stand and they can't move and they can't mobilize correctly. And you can't have that type of presentation without an impact on alignment, resting, or otherwise. So the need is going to increase. The sophistication of our industry is changing. This younger generation of people that are coming through our certification course are amazing. And I think about even 10 years ago, to be perfectly honest with you, I was, as well as some of my colleagues in the industry, they're up in the years like I am now, were really discouraged that we were wondering, where's this next generation? Where's it going to come from? Because we weren't seeing those folks. And, you know, 10, 15 years ago, people in our certification course, the majority of them, like three quarters of them, when raising hands, three quarters of them had been in the industry for 15 plus years. Now it's completely flipped. We're seeing younger, really energetic, really smart people who are recognizing this field of complex rehab technology provision as a true profession. The credentialing as being an ATP, the growing programs like University of Pittsburgh, where they're graduating master's levels and doctorate levels, people in complex rehab, it's really, really raising the bar. And along with that comes a realization that taking care of individuals with complex rehabilitation technology addressable issues requires some work. And this is their reality. Where those of us who grew up in the industry back in the J days when I moved to Colorado, it was easy. I mean, life was pretty easy and margins were strong. Now there are real challenges with respect to this. It does take more work to get somebody approved and ready to go for custom. That said, it is a whole hell of a lot less work doing that now and doing custom earlier when that effort will be less than waiting and waiting and putting it off to the extent that the resources are just being scrunched in a too late of intervention and not with all the outcomes available. We, on a monthly basis at our certification course, are seeing a whole different caliber of professionalism and energy towards recognizing what needs to be done. So the need and the willingness and ability to recognize and meet that then is converging with technological advances that are going to allow us to provide more specific, better fitting stuff. Who's to say we can't have next day custom seating? There's only further development and time before, you know, that may be a possibility. So think about that, you know, through improvements in all facets of how this is done, from recognition of need, through documentation of need, through simulation, communication of that need, and then ultimately manufacturing of a specific seating system for somebody. It may prove ultimately, you know, to be a more cost-effective way to manage individuals with disabilities. I go back into our warehouse And we have 54 different Java back shells to meet the range of sizes. That's 54 SKUs that we have to manage and sell and provide. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, we could have just one SKU. It's a custom SKU. That's way out there. There obviously have to be some changes, but you know, we have to put our goals beyond the horizon. We have to think about the possibilities of the future and create not only products that can meet those needs, but create an environment in which we can prove that. And so, you know, these efforts of a separate benefit category and continuing to amp up the legitimacy of our industry and get on the wagon and speak to your legislators and get this separate benefit category through there so we can start to get greater recognition of the service component and proper identification. We need to know the true biomechanical risk of skin breakdown. We don't know why people skin break down. We don't know why we can have two people sitting in front of us that by all current methods of measurement would appear to have the same skin risk. Yet one of them, you look at them sideways and they get a pressure injury. And the other one can, you know, plop down onto the floor in their kitchen all day long, get on, and their skin's fine. Why is that? And I know it's great work being done by Georgia Tech. Sharon Sonnenblum and her team specifically are looking at what is the biomechanical risk of skin breakdown. So we can have better definition of that. We can have better definition of material and design requirements to better meet the needs of clients. So there's a lot of work to be done, but I'm very bullish on this industry. I'm very bullish on the people within it at all levels and excited to see what comes down the path in the coming years.
I like the optimism that you're bringing because sometimes this industry is short on it. My last question, it sounds like the takeaway here is that custom seating used to be a slow process, and now it seems like that is no longer necessarily the case because of 3D printing. And I specifically wanted to ask you, because you mentioned to me earlier that Ride Designs is now a seating and technology company, not just a seating company, but a seating and technology company. I wanted to give you an opportunity to give a shout out to how your company has grown and the types of professionals that you've hired to make this a reality.
Yeah, if somebody would have told me 10 years ago when, you know, Ride Designs was still struggling to get on the radar and really be accepted as a mainstream level intervention, even in the custom and standard realm, and if somebody had told me 10 years ago we were going to be leading the industry with respect to technical innovation in the custom realm, I would have said, I don't think so. But we've assembled a team now where we're not just some mechanical engineers back there now. We've got aerospace. We've got mechanical engineers, the process of developing not only the process of 3D printing, but, you know, material sciences, chemistry, physicists. We just added a computer science specialist who specializes in quantum computer science, whatever the hell that is. It's this ability to learn, essentially, as it's artificial intelligence, it's all of this type of stuff. You know, right now, it is a somewhat cumbersome process for what we call our shapeshifters, who are orthotic and prosthetic technicians that do the modifications on these body shapes that come in. And so this computer science aspect of our company now is looking at simplifying that process to make it less cumbersome. That will improve the speed and accuracy. Every shape that comes in gives us more data points. We're talking every shape has literally thousands of data points. So we do have quantum levels, really, of data relative to body shape that we don't even understand how to fully utilize. So I'm very excited to see how that will come about. The different disciplines that are needed to pull off a project like this is phenomenal. And it'll nod to our entire research and development team underneath Josh Middle and lead engineer Carl, who spearheaded this and brought these people in to help us, stayed on budget and made it happen. I'm thrilled. One little shout out to that computer science specialist is my own oldest daughter, Emily. So I'm very, very, obviously, I'm a proud daddy to see my superstar kiddo make an impact on the company that helped pay the bills to get her through college.
I love that. And I love that so many other disciplines are being introduced to complex rehab technology, because it's not like CRT is a household name or understood that way. But I love all these other disciplines coming together. So, Tom, thank you so much for being with me. I had a great time.
That was my pleasure, Lori. And hopefully this will spark some interest and spark a more aggressive approach to taking care of these individuals. We're honored to be out there in the field and support these individuals, these riders. Right on.
With that, we'll wrap up our podcast with Tom Hetzel from Ride Designs. Mobility management podcasts are available for listening and downloading on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and everywhere else you listen to your podcasts. The best way to make sure you don't miss any of our episodes is to subscribe, and you can also go onto our website, mobilitymgmt.com, to listen there. Thanks very much for being with us, and we'll be back again soon.